Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, I want to welcome you to the next phase with Black Ice and Friends. And got some special guests. I thought I saw in the chat room a minute ago, Mr. T.L. Harris and guest 2952. Welcome. And hey, T.L., give me a call through whenever you get ready. Also, let me start off with this. Every week I like to do this. Any comments or opinions you hear on this show do not necessarily represent the views and or beliefs of the host, sponsors, or Blog Talk Radio. This show addresses community concerns in regard to designing ways members in the communities can increase their ability to acquire more income for themselves. In addition to that, methods to address increasing political strength and impact also will be featured. Financial enhancement, increasing political strength and impact, improving possibilities for combining efforts with others who have similar interests. All of these and more poignant concerns will be approached in an entertaining format, hopefully. There will be musical segments, interesting guests, as well as questions and comments from our listening audience, which is you. If you have any interest in improving situations for our youth, that is including stemming incarceration, estimates for minority members of this society, reassessing the significance of spiritual impact, and investigating the best possible means of boosting knowledge for improving your health, as well as many pertinent topics too numerous to include, please join us on the next phase with Ice and Friends. And if you'd like to give us a call, please do. And the numbers I'll give you to call, the number I'll give you to call is 347-945-7040. And like I said, I did see Brother T.L. Harris. I want to welcome you in to the chat room tonight, and all others who have any interest, please give us a call. It's 347-945-7040. And it's been kind of a real exciting week for me, and culminating in today's show. And I got a chance to visit with a lady, a lovely sister, Miss India DeClaire, and she's on daily at 10 a.m. And I didn't write the name of her show down, but she has a very interesting and entertaining show. And she was telling me about some other individuals that you might have an interest in on Blog Talk Radio. One of the people was Perry Steele. So if you get a chance, you might check out those names. And if I get any other names of any other shows that I think are relevant and pertinent to topics that you might have some interest in, you know, we'll be passing those along to you. But if you'll, you know, use keywords and phrases when you come into Blog Talk Radio, then you'll get an opportunity to see some of the shows that have some relevance and importance and significance in regard to the issues that you have some concerns for. One of the issues that I wanted to get into tonight is, well, it's going to take me a minute to get it situated here, as usual. But this one is about, you know, one of the topical issues that I run into quite a bit, and I'm in different chat rooms online, is a lot of people, you know, feel as though that there is too much interest being paid to the culture or ethnicity of different people for different reasons. And, you know, what my position is on that actually is that, you know, and what it's deduced to is commonly called the, what they call the race card, all right? And, you know, that to me, it has a tendency to dissuade conversation in a lot of instances. And so, you know, what I suggest in my opinion is that, you know, people, any card you choose to play on the next phase with Black Ice and Friends is fine with me. And hopefully we'll have some ladies that I talked with earlier today who I think tell me they have some comedy that they'd like to add to the show, and that'll be great also. Let me check back in the in my call room, because a brother of mine was supposed to call through and And so I'm trying to, there, okay. Now I'm getting my switchboard back together. Ogun, hey, how you doing? Welcome, thank you for joining. Ogun, if you want to give us a call, please do. Looking at my switchboard here. And, okay. That's cool. Anyway, if you want to give us a call, please call through at area code 347-945-7040. And I tell you, I'm such a non-techie person, you know. And I pulled up the thing that I wanted to talk with you about, and I lost it. So I'm pulling it up again. But, you know, I was talking about the race car thing. And it's not to make anyone feel uncomfortable, but it's just to let me give you my position, my perspective, is that there are those who are in my culture and of my ethnicity who have not had the opportunity to have our positions expressed and explored, you know, from our perspective. And it's always generally done in third person. It'll be something like they, them, and, you know, why shouldn't they be satisfied, you know. And what I seek to do is to expand our opinion to include us, you know, people of African heritage in it. And the reason is that it's assumed generally when you hear news stories, if it's not necessarily specified, that the individuals involved with the news story are of Anglo descent. And if they are of African descent, then it would definitely be accentuated. And so, you know, what the commentators who speak about us on the corporate and in the national media generally don't have you know, that affinity for the struggles that we've gone through. And when you say struggles that we've gone through, you'll be attacked a lot of times by people saying, stop whining and this and that, you know. And it's not about whining. It's about presenting our story from our perspective. And, you know, we're open to anyone presenting their story from their perspective. And we welcome you, if you choose to give us a call here at Blog Talk Radio, and that is the next phase with Black Ice and Friends. And let me check again to the switchboard and see if I don't have any calls yet. So what I'll do is embark on this story, and if I get a call through, I'll cut it kind of short, but I'll embark on this story, and hopefully you'll find something in here that you can relate to. And I got this story from The Griot. I don't know if you've heard of The Griot before, www.thegriot.com. It says, why white support for Obama is stuck behind Gates. You remember Gates, the Professor Charles Louis Gates, Henry Louis Gates, who got arrested at his home. Now, this is going back a ways, but this may have some relevance to you, so I'll take off on this story right quick and hope that I'll do it some service. It's a little bit long and involved, but Harvard Law Professor Charles Ogletree has just released a book called The Presumption of Guilt, The Arrest of Henry Louis Gates, Jr., and Race, Class, and Crime in America. The book discusses the June 16, 2009 arrest of Gates, a Harvard professor, by Cambridge Police Sergeant James Crowley, on his front porch of his home. His arrest in handcuffs from the impossible crime of breaking into his own house, or, shall we say, being home while black, set off a debate throughout the country on race, class, and law enforcement. President Obama's initial reaction to last summer's Gates arrest was less of a political answer than the sincere reaction of a black man living in America. The president said that the officers acted stupidly in arresting Gates. And he was right. And this is a quote. I'm just reading this article. But in the pivotal moment in his administration, uh, uh, but in this pivotal moment in his administration on the issue of race, Obama paid a price with white voters, and it's gone downhill ever since. Now, I don't know if you've noticed that, but, you know, when the national media, they got after Obama about Reverend Wright, and that didn't, you know, that once that dissipated, then they got after him on another issue. And it goes on to say, immediately following Obama's reaction to the Gates incident last July, the president began to slip in the polls among whites, and with his approval rating dropping from 53% to 46%, according to the Pew Research Center for People and the Press. In recent months, his approval rating has averaged between 46 and 50%. One poll gave the president a mid to high 40s approval rating, including a majority approval among Latinos and over 90% support from African Americans, but only a 35% thumbs up for whites. In addition, a recent Gallup survey placed his approval rating at 39% among whites, 63% among non-whites, and 93% among black Americans. Meanwhile, other polls reveal that the gapping divide in racial perception between blacks and whites, with attitudes about the Gates arrest, between blacks and white, and attitudes about the Gates arrest. For example, a CNN opinion research poll found that 52% of Americans believe racism among police officers is common, and 44% saying it is rare. So while 47% of whites said it was common, and 49% said it is rare, 86% of blacks surveyed concluded that police racism is common. So how do you feel about that? You think that racism among, and you know, I use the term racism loosely, because it's not about race, it's about color, in my opinion. And while 65% of the whites believed a white homeowner would have been treated the same way as Gates, only 25% of blacks agreed, black Americans, that is. Similarly, an ABC Washington Post poll on the Gates case found that 76% of African Americans said black folks do not receive the same treatment as white from the police. So how do you feel, and that's just a question I'm asking, how do you feel about that? Only 34% of whites, fewer than half the percentage of blacks, believe blacks do not receive equal treatment as whites. In the study, 37% of blacks said that they felt they had been stopped by the cops because of their race, including 59% of men, 22% of women. Also, 20% of other non-whites said they were stopped by police based on race. And I wish I could mark that, and I'll check the chat room right quick, see if I got a call coming through. And if you'll pardon me for a second, I'm a little bit slow about getting around here. Okay. Oh boy, this is interesting for me. Switchboard. There we go. So I don't have any callers through. And let me look for caller. No, okay. Let me look for the. This is interesting. You know, I tell you, getting used to the switchboard for me each week presents a different problem for me. I think what I'm going to have to do is invest in another computer so that I can have two or three screens open at the same time, because this is really a trip here. I can't get back to my chat room for some reason. Go to my switchboard, then I'll go to my chat room. And that's how I do it. And it's got to reload. But anyway, I was just, you know, thinking about that Louis Gates issue. And guest 3147, thanks for joining us. Let me try again to get back now to my story. But anyway, the point that I'm trying to make here is that we as people of color are African Americans. We have communities that we have to be involved with, and we have our youth that are of ultimate concern for many of us. And you know what I think that when we have to go through all these changes to justify our existence and justify our, you know, the relevant situations that we run into just in our social interactions, you know, with police, with housing, with loans, with jobs, you know, and all these different things, they are very distracting, but nonetheless, they are very legitimate issues. And so what we had been doing, it was, you know, going and pleading our case with the dominant social culture. And it seems to me sometimes that when we go to the dominant social culture and we plead our cases, that we get dismissed or ignored, you know, and it seems as though that people think that that our positions aren't relevant for whatever reason. And to me, what that does is that has a terrible impact on us in our communities. And what I seek to do here with what I do with the opportunity that I have with this particular show is that I like to explore ways that we can be more effective and be more influential in our communities. And I realize I'm in a rural area. And Brother T.L. Harris, I'm not sure where Brother Ogun is, but Brother T.L. Harris, he's in the metro area here in Texas. And, you know, each, and I've talked with people like, I believe, Sister India DeClaire is in New York, and there are other individuals. I wouldn't consider myself to be an air personality, but there are the air personalities on Blog Talk Radio who are in different segments of the U.S. And, you know, each one of us has to resolve our issues with our communities and our interactions with the power structures in the communities in different ways, different means, different methods. And whichever, you know, and so what I'd hoped to do was allow us all to have a sort of a meeting place where that we could share different methods that we would employ in order to achieve some and open up some possibilities. And you know, like I say, one of the things that, you know, has to do with primarily the youth, and also there are some issues to me that have to do with the sisters in our communities, and there are some sisters in our communities who have, and the reason that I come to that is this, that having had an opportunity to work with an organization in the community that I, you know, was in previously, this has been quite some time back, what I found was there were some single female head of households. And, you know, what it is about the single female head of households is that they were raising children. And these children were female or male, whichever. And they were involved with the school systems or whatever other systems were in the power structure in the community. And in some instances, I mean, what I think ideally we would like to see is that our offspring being encouraged to develop to whatever their full potential is. And if there is anything that would be an obstacle to them, anything that would be a diversion or a distraction to them, it would cause them, in my opinion, not to be able to be fully engaged and get the full potential of the opportunities that they have available to them. Now, there, to me, is a system that's designed, you know, for whatever reason, to keep that struggle alive. And some people, they have different names for it. But anyway, I would like to see, you know, some of the sisters in the community who have a very strong self-esteem and even the brothers, the sisters, the fathers, mothers, or families, whichever, to you know, offer some information that would be inspirational for some of the other people in the community who may not have had the same opportunity to develop that sense of strong self. And you know, hopefully in that regard, then you know, we could tend to reinforce each other in the good things that we do as a culture. And if that's at all available to us, then you know, those are some of the things that I'd like to explore. Now, I'm trying to get back to the story that I had initiated earlier with that Louis Gates. And, you know, like I say, I'm going to have to work on probably getting me another PC so that I can, you know, have everything on different screens. And I'm going to ask some people, how do you do that with this Blog Talk Radio? But I can only say that I really appreciate Blog Talk Radio providing the opportunity for us to do the things that we do, to reach out to our community in a way that corporate media doesn't seem that they feel they are, well, they don't seem inclined to do. So as I was listening to Sister India DeClaire, who's on daily from, I believe, 10. She's on from maybe, I think, an hour and a half, 10 to 11:30. And I believe that's Central Standard Time because that's when I got a chance to hear her today. She has a totally different, she's a more professional. She has a totally different perspective, a totally different approach. And I really enjoy her show. And I really recommend that you check it out. And I'm like I said, she told me about Mr. Steele. Perry Steele. So if you make it to Blog Talk Radio and you want to find some of these individuals like India, her name is INDIADECLAIR, and all you have to do is type it into the search bar, or if you have an interest in Mr. Perry Steele, I'm not sure at all when his show comes on, but there are some of us who have tried to go beyond just you know, more or less kind of rehashing the obvious that we're having problems in our communities and so forth, and so you move on toward resolving some of these issues. Hence the name. The next phase, and that's with Ice and Friends. And as I said, if you feel like giving us a call, give us a call. Call through at 347-945-7040. Now I'm back to this Gates thing. I left off with this at this paragraph here. It says that was talking about the polls in regard to Obama prior, during, and post this Louis Gates episode, where the university professor was arrested at his own home by the police department and handcuffed, and he had some photos that I think weren't very flattering for him, but and it brought some issues up that put Obama in a, you know, he's been in a precarious position because he's carrying a lot of weight. You know, a lot of people want to see him succeed. I, for one, am a total Obama supporter, 100%. And there are those who could care less whether he succeeds or not, and there are those who would like to see him not succeed. And, you know, and though there are many, many reasons as to why they would or wouldn't. And, you know, they say, well, oh, the only reason that you're for Obama is because he's, quote-unquote, of African descent or half African or whatever. And, you know, that's not really true from my perspective. What's true is that I watched 8 years happen to us, and we were in a terrible physical situation as well as a social situation here in the U.S. and had a couple of military engagements, job outsourcing and so forth. And this guy came in at 40, I believe he's 46 years of age. That's very young. And this guy, to me, you know, he's, wouldn't matter what his name was, wouldn't matter what his ethnicity was. He's a very intelligent person. And, you know, I'd just like to support the guy and hope that he's very successful in all his endeavors. Anyway, I will go continue on with this story. It says, well, so much for the teachable moment on race that Henry Louis Gates incident promised to become, at least in the hearts and minds of so many of goodwill. You know, many of us wanted that to provide some information and instruction as to, you know, how we could just get along, like Rodney King used to say. It should remind us of the ways in which many idealistic Americans poured all their hopes and dreams into the vessels, into the vessel that was Obama, the Obama candidacy, praying for the ushering in of a colorblind society. You know, not to downplay the transformative and symbolic nature of that election victory, but that did not happen, nor should it have happened, right? Let's see. All right. Let me go back. Mr. Harris, hello there. Anyway, peace. O-Gun, he left the room, but guest number 3147, thank you for being there. And anyway, you know, we're trying to continue on with this story. It says, but why was the Gates incident a turning point in the white support for the president? And this individual who wrote this story, and let me give you this individual's name, David A. Love. And he's associated with The Griot, T-H-E-G-R-I-O, The Griot, www.thegriot.com. Anyway, number one, Obama was supposed to be different from other black people. Isn't that something? Why should he, but anyway, why should he have to be? That's the question I have. Why should anyone have to be different? You know, why is it that my value isn't sufficient? I don't mean, you know, I want to judge a man not by the color of his skin, but the character, you know. It's not like that for me. I'm who I am, and I do what I do. And this is the way that Obama, but there are so many people who have invested themselves in the idea that that there are people, segments of our society and culture who are totally inept, incapable, and don't have a position, don't have a reason to be in a position of authority. And when you know, when I look at myself and I look at my other brothers and sisters, and I don't see any reason that we shouldn't be able and capable, you know, to be in a position of authority. But, you know, those same concerns find themselves manifested in job applications, loans, and any number of other things. And this is why it's significant to me. And this is why I bring it forward, you know, and submit it for your consideration and examination. If you find anything of any relevance in it, you know, I'm glad. I think I've done a service. You know, but if not, then I'm sorry that I've disappointed you. But anyway, Obama was supposed to be different. Barack Obama was going to be different from the rest. Sure, he was black, but he was different, better than black. After all, he was clean and articulate. His diction was on point, and he went to fancy Ivy League schools. Most of all, Obama passed his test on the Sunday morning show circuit, with the obligatory repudiation of angry black leaders. And most of all, he sufficiently threw his pastor and mentor, Reverend Jeremiah Wright, under the bus, comforting whites who would entertain the thought of inviting him for dinner. You know, but his Gates comments exceeded the comfort level of whites who are squeamish about race. I mean, they took him out of that comfort zone, you know, kind of squeamish. I'm not too sure, you know. I've never been around them, and I don't know what they are like, and I'm not too sure if I can be a part of them, you know. So for a while, he seemed like one of us, they thought, a white guy with a tan who downplays the importance of race. The astute black observer knew he had a fine line to walk in garnering white votes and the Obama swagger betrayed him in any case. You know, in the end, Obama made the mistake of thinking like a black man, demonstrating his blackness and his willingness to, how dare he, identify with black issues. The most extreme form of this sentiment was reflected in Representative Steve King, who recently said that Obama has a default mechanism that favors the black person. Now, doesn't that make you feel uncomfortable if you're a black American? You know, don't you feel like that he shouldn't represent you? He shouldn't speak out about you. He should be, you know, more, you know, comfortable for people of other cultures and ethnicities. But unfortunately, Obama, he got thrown out of that deal, right? Okay. Says with whites hold a more favorable view of the police. It says white communities have fundamentally different relationships with police than black and Latino neighborhoods. In white areas, police were always there to serve and protect, rescue cats from trees, and the like. In other words, the police are trusted, historically, for many communities of color. The police were an occupying force, and they were on call to harass, arrest, abuse, and sometimes shoot to kill. When Obama criticized the Cambridge police for arresting Gates, he embraced a version of reality that was alien to many whites, yet all too familiar to African Americans. Isn't that weird? I mean, you know, when he addressed those police like that, it's like, boy, what are you doing talking back to us? You know. But anyway, number three, it says, whites have a more positive view of criminal justice system, right? Hold on just a second. Hey, bro, can you come by tomorrow? Come by tomorrow. I can't make it today. Yeah, thanks. All right, bye. Sorry about that. Supposed to be getting a delivery, but I'm not going to be able to do it because it should have come before I was on the show. It says whites have a more positive view of criminal justice system. After all, it is stacked in their favor. Around 70% of America's prisoners are people of color, yet 90% of the judges, prosecutors, and defense attorneys are white. Now, that is a recipe for disaster of a criminal justice system in which the inequalities are built in. Blacks are regarded as a criminal element and presumed guilty. I mean, think of that. You know, is this a thought that you've ever had? It says, again, that the recipe for disaster of a criminal justice system, which is that around 70% of America's prisoners are people of color. 70%. 90% of the judges, prosecutors, and defense attorneys are white. That is a recipe for disaster of the criminal system, a justice system in which inequalities are built in. You know, let me stop right there for a second. When you say built in, you wonder why is it built in? Just because the justices are white and the defense attorneys are white and the prosecutors are white and the juries are primarily, why is that built in? You know, a sister told me, and her name is Lady Lily, and I'm sure she, anyway, Lady Lily made a point to me one time that I'll carry this probably to my grave. That point, to paraphrase it, is that the judges don't see those defendants as they see their own culture. They see the people of African descent different, okay? And so then they can, if you have this inclination to make a difference and to castigate or whatever and villainize and, you know, demonize a certain segment of society, then it makes it easier for you to find them more suspect and scrutinize them a little bit closer. And be more skeptical of their testimony or whatever. you know, so, but anyway, it says blacks are regarded as a criminal element and presumed guilty. They are more likely to be arrested, prosecuted, and imprisoned for the same crime and locked up with longer sentences. And these are your children, my children, your grandchildren, my grandchildren, your nieces, nephews, uncles, aunts, whatever. Some neighborhoods of color in New York City, have what are referred to as million-dollar blocks. In other words, $1 million in taxpayer dollars are spent annually to incarcerate the prisoners who come from each of these city blocks. Yeah, that's anyway, number four. America is still in denial about race. Some whites are tired of hearing about race. You know, you hear that a lot? I'm tired of hearing about it. Tired of white guilt and are ready to proclaim that racism is dead. They don't believe racial discrimination still exists, and unless it's reverse discrimination, they don't believe it exists unless it's reverse discrimination. After all, the president is black, and he received 43% of white votes, and not to mention 54% of young white voters. So how can you still call America a racist nation? I mean, I'm wondering, can you? You know, if you feel so, give me a call at 347-945-7040. President Obama's Sergeant Crowley comment gave the country an opportunity to study race, to delve into the problems of racial profiling and racial injustice. Unfortunately, they didn't take the bait, opting instead to retreat to the safe, gated community of their mind. Anyway, again, if you so choose, give me a call at 347-945-7040, and we'll be glad to chat with you. There we go. No callers yet. Okay, looking back in the chat room, another user is logged on and using this. Whoa. Anyway, I'm having some technical difficulties. I'm not sure what that's all about. I guess someone logged in with my name. What we'll do is we'll continue on with some more pertinent, relevant articles until I get this technical thing straightened out. I'm not sure what it is. Oh, I know what it is. Okay. Ah, there's a caller. Caller 817, let me get you up here in the chat room. Okay, can you hear me okay? 817, can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
There we are. This is my brother T.L.
This is.
How you doing, brother T.L.? Welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
I'm glad to have you, brother. Did you get a chance to hear any of what I was talking about earlier with the story on Gates? There's my brother. Let me hold on, T.L. You're going to recognize this voice. I'm going to open up the phone line to 773. Can you hear me, sir?
Yes, I can.
That's my brother. How you doing? I'm glad. You know who that is, brother T.L.?
Now, that voice sounds really, really familiar.
That's brother Ola. Brother Ola, he's in here, and these are some friends of mine that I met on the chat circuit. And, guys, did either of you, brother Ola, you know, I want you each to expound for as long as you choose to. It's 7:38, and we have roughly 42 minutes to go. So whatever you feel like talking about, you take turns, and I'll try to get my technical thing straightened out.
Oh, yeah. Please get your technical thing straightened out.
Love you, brother. I love you. I'm telling you, you know that. You go out and do your thing. I'm working on this other deal.
Well, I'm not, you know, I guess I could only hear a portion of what you were saying earlier, Brother Ice, but I think that one of the things that that we have to accept is that being born African, black, in the United States is to be a problem. And because we are a problem, we are something to be dealt with by the other cultural groups. And Barack's election was, although he would not say it is, but it was essentially the majority of the people reaching out for anyone who could address the problems of the last 16 years of conservative, and I'm not going to say Republican, but I'm just simply saying conservative thinking. It goes back so far, and this is not a recent kind of thing that happened.
Mm-hmm.
It essentially, as Elizabeth Warren indicated, she's the head of the Congressional Oversight Committee, and what she did was she talked about the pattern of economic ebb and flow in the United States from its very inception up until 1929 when we had the, quote, Great Depression. And what was put into place was a series of regulatory laws designed not to allow that kind of thing to happen. We had the Glass-Steagall Act. We had, it was any number, FDIC, all of those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there were instances of where there were recessions. And just bear with me, with this. It's a little
You're fine, brother.
But basically what happened was since there were a series of ups and downs, there was never again the kind of significant financial decline like in the Depression.
Mm-hmm.
And then came the Nixon Revolution, along with the Newt Gingrich Revolution.
Mm-hmm.
And what you began to have was a series of attempts by conservatives to withdraw regulation.
Hmm.
And it was like pulling the string out of a knitted Afghan.
Right.
And each time that they pulled those regulatory processes out, they made the whole body economic politic weaker and weaker and weaker.
Mm-hmm.
And then the crowning achievement was the PATCO adventure initiated by Reagan. With that, what happened then was that the balance the balance between corporate and working people was forever destroyed.
Right.
And from that point on, there was no one to hold banks, corporations accountable. From that point on, you just see a series of adventures from that point on. And then, what was it, 90, I don't remember exactly, it was 98, 97, something like that. They then threw out the Glass-Steagall Act, which ended all regulation. And the point of all of this is that then we had the housing bubble and then the misadventures of George Bush II, and then our current economic crisis.
Right.
But this was all done by singular ethnic groups. It was all done by a singular managerial elite.
Right.
And in comes someone who kind of, you know, as my daddy used to call it, the old foodie Mnuchin. He hung a left and shook a right. And he became president of the United States.
Right.
It was sorely needed. And now the biggest problem is that he's trying to put back in place regulatory powers to ensure that those kinds of things don't happen again.
Right.
Machiavelli talked about you always find lukewarm defenders and all those who create a new order of things start with defenders of the old order.
Mm-hmm.
And that's essentially what we're seeing now.
Mm-hmm.
And if you keep that along with the notion that there's been a consistent anti-African perspective in this country from 1660s till today.
Right.
It stands to reason why Barack Obama would have serious problems.
Hey, brother, hold on. Hold on. Just don't you go away, brother. T.L. Harris. Brother T.L. Harris, you still here?
Oh, yes, hey. I'm right here.
There you are. Hey, brother, hold on. Yes. I want you, you know, you and T.L. Harris, y'all share the airways, and, you know, the only thing, brother.
Hold on, keep going as far as I'm concerned. He was just warming up.
I know, brother, hold on. He doesn't talk much, right?
No, you said it, keep going.
Nah, brother, I want you to kick in, and anybody else, if you want to, let me throw this number out there, and y'all don't hang up. You know, I can put a couple more people online if they choose to call. It's 347-945-7040. But T.L. Harris, I'd like to get T.L., you're a lot younger than Brother Ola and myself. And I'd just like to get your perspective. And Brother Ola, you kick back in it because let me say this right quick, and I'll shut up and let y'all carry on. But, you know, I think Obama is a victim of his own success, you know, because he was expected to fail. And I think just by virtue of the fact that he's not failing, there are a lot of people that are in fear that this guy is laying something down that's going to be, you know, I mean, you know, reasonably phenomenal.
Okay.
Well, I'll
be quiet.
No, go ahead, Olean.
No, T.L., I didn't already yet. I'm gonna let you go ahead. Cause
man, I had
think
my
I'm,
physical paper out.
Mm-hmm. I was gonna take.
I had my physical paper. I was learning.
Come on.
Me too. Me too. When Elder Olajami speaks, I listen, and that's honest too. Me and him, we argue, but I appreciate this guy more than he can imagine.
Absolutely.
Well,
but.
Anywhere you want to start, anywhere you want to start.
Let me just say this, that the United States is a nation that lies to itself about who it is and what
mm-hmm.
it is. And because it's created this massive lie, and it's being reinforced, of course, because it maintains a certain cultural group's dominance, hegemony over every other cultural group, you know, and it runs across the book. I mean, we could talk in terms of economics, but what we really need to look at is the resolution of the problems in the United States.
Right.
Are not going to be found simply in the political process alone. It's going
okay.
to be in the democratization of ethnic groups in this country. And you see, racial democracy should be and is at the same time cultural democracy. And
right.
if there is a cultural democratization of this country, then what you will have then is all cultures, because despite all that we believe that we are a national group, it gives rise to the understanding when we speak about each other. We talk about our cultural heritage. We talk about people being Greeks and people being Italians and
right.
And Latinos. And then all those divisions within the Latinos. I mean, but one of the things that we're not, this is where the lie comes in. One of the things that we're not really prepared to do is address the fact that there's only one democratic group that determines the social standards, that is the ultimate group in this country.
Right.
And because we don't understand, because we don't speak to that, then what happens is that all of those values that came out of that Anglo perspective permeates every group. They are the ones who determine what education is. They determine the economic process. They determine how you get married, how you bury your dead. It all comes out of that one singular ethnic group. And someone says, well, we're all Americans. But that is a political designation. That is a political designation that denies the social dynamic.
Right. The social reality, actually.
And the social reality, certainly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
And yet, you know, we you know, when you look at it, and here's a guy that comes in, you know, as one guy said one time, one comedian said one time, he used to go in one neighborhood, and because he was Puerto Rican and black, and he had a little European in him.
Right.
And people used to jump on him because they say, we're going to beat you up because you're all of them. You know, here's where, and that's essentially what's happening with Obama. He's
right.
All of them.
Right.
He's every aspect of every element that exists in this country, with the exception of their political positions.
Right.
And you have to remember that those who are along those lines who want to continue to shape the country in a certain kind of way,
mm-hmm.
always define themselves as being white, Northern European, and male.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Exactly. You know but you know, Brother Olai, and. The thing of it is, all right, is that yeah, I agree there, you know, and you know, who knows, you know, what the future holds, right? Because like I say, if you get a chance, there's a sister that comes on, and I have tremendous admiration for her, India Declare, Miss India Declare. She comes on at 10 a.m. daily, and I've been off on Thursdays and Fridays. Usually, I work. You know, I'm off on the weekends. But if you get a chance, please check her out. And there's another guy that she was telling me about, Perry Steele, and he has a show like this and everything. I mean, you know, well, not like this. Their shows are
mm-hmm.
they're more sophisticated. Not that my guests aren't sophisticated. The host is not sophisticated. All right, so that's
no, your technology.
I do what I, you brother. You know, I do what I do, Brother Olai. But you know, like I say, what we say here is we don't know if this stuff ended up in Poland. We don't know where it's ending up at. But you know, and I really appreciate. You know, I've been trying to get you to come on here for ever since I got started with this thing. Tia Harris as well, and TL. You know, let me throw this at you, Brother Olai. Don't you go nowhere. But Brother TL is an aficionado of music, and so hopefully, you know, we'll get a chance to do something with him with his music. TL, you hear me?
I'm right here.
Okay. But, you know, when you talk about what I want to know is, Brother Olai, that these things have an impact on us culturally, and Brother TL, they have an impact. And anybody, if you want to give us a call, just feel free to do so, 347-945-7900. 7040. And I'll be checking the switchboard, and if I see a number pop up, I guarantee you we'll put you on. But, you know, what I'm, Brother Ola, how, you know, I got children and I got grandchildren. How, you know, my children are older. My youngest is 20 now, and my oldest grandson is like 18, and my youngest grandbaby, which is a girl, is almost 3. And, you know, I know that, I think that's your daughter that's on your pick that I've seen.
Oh, yeah.
You know, your profile pick. I don't mention the name of the chat.
No,
tonight.
That's what I'm saying.
We'll talk about it later.
That's my niece, you know, there.
Oh, that's your niece. But anyway,
yeah.
All I was going to say, she's a beautiful young lady. But what I was going to say is, how do you provide her with the encouragement, the information, and the inspiration that she needs to far exceed what our endeavors have been? Yours are far more advanced. And, let me tell you, I have the ultimate respect and appreciation for you. And I'm going to bring this up right quick, okay? Is that we were engaged and involved with the Shaquanda Cotton, and you more so than anyone who came all the way down from your state, I believe it's Illinois, am I right?
Right.
All the way down to Texas for a 15-year-old young lady who had been mistreated and incarcerated for no reason, and together with some other individuals on the chat site. I mean, you know, this is how significant that, you know, chat is in a way. You know, it's frivolous to some, but to some it has a very definite a significant aspect to it. And brother, I'm gonna tell you, you came all the way to Texas. Now I live on the west side of Texas, and you came all the way from Illinois, and I didn't even get from West Texas to East Texas where this occurred. And it came together. We had people that emailed all the way from Australia, the United Kingdom, New Zealand, to the district attorney, right? And the judge,
yeah,
too, I think, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Brother, I you know, let me tell you, man, you know, it almost, I mean, seriously, I'm not an emotional dude, but it brings tears to my eyes that you would make the sacrifices that you made down there in that hostile environment in that East Texas, East Northeast Texas town. And I don't know if you feel comfortable, if you choose to, you can name it or not. But you came all the way down here, and you showed that family that there was, you shared more than I did in Texas, you know. And what I wonder is, how do you encourage? How do you inspire your offsprings and your relatives, brother, if you don't mind? I appreciate it.
Well, that's a heck of a compliment, man. But
now, I'm being honest, brother. You know I ain't trying
to
run no game on you. I'm telling you straight up. That's how I feel.
But I don't see it as being that much. You
know, I know you don't, and that's the reason why I said it, because you wouldn't.
Right. Well, you know, there's some people who do certain kinds of things. They have... I'm an organizer, as you know, and
right,
and
right, exactly.
And most good organizers, and I've known a number of tremendous, and we lost a very good one.
I was hoping you
mentioned
him
just a few days ago. You know,
thank you,
Abu Dika. You know, but that and just 2 years ago we lost another, Jim Rudd. There's been a number of good organizers who just simply decide that's enough of this.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And in that town, and in that particular town, there were two sisters there who were fighting alone.
Right, exactly.
That's essentially Brenda Cherry and Creola Cotton. And
right.
Let me just tell you, they have not stopped.
Hey,
I mean,
we got to get them.
Think about the tremendous
pressure. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, to go and
relentless
do this over and over again against overwhelming odds. People say, "Now you got to be crazy. You got to be a brand new fool, you know, to get out here." But things have to be. You have to decide that at some point or another. My daddy told me once. He said, "You know, my worth as a man is not going to be in the things that I do.
Right.
It's going to be in the kind of children that I put out there to continue the legacy."
Amen. Amen, brother.
And those sisters are putting out children who are they're modeling that behavior. They're doing what they need to do. And I'm just pleased as punch that young lady is now moving forward in such a way, and I suspect that by next year, she'll be ready to go away to a 4-year university. She's in a junior
Amen.
College now down there.
Amen. Hey, brother, let me ask you a question.
And that's not something I did.
Right.
That's not something I did, but and what that is, that's a testament to our need to succeed.
Right, exactly.
We have to.
Right.
We don't have a choice. And you don't make good steel over a low flame. You know?
Right.
And there's
right.
so many who figure that, well, you know, I follow that true path. You know, I was reading a book, Facing Mount Kenya by Jomo Kenyatta. Jomo Kenyatta was allegedly the head of the Mau Mau, the Gikuyu's anti-British, anti-colonialism in
right.
Kenya.
Mm-hmm.
But he was, first of all, an anthropologist, and he identified things in the family that was so critical. They taught them how to interact with mother, father, grandfather, aunts, uncles, cousins. And there was a way that you had to relate to them. You related to them openly and honestly with respect. And in turn, there was that kind of reciprocity. They in turn treated you openly and honestly with respect and gave you a sense of who and what you were. And you were allowed to make some mistakes.
Right.
You were allowed to get out there and try a thing. Unfortunately, you know, we're in an environment now where children have the very nature of play determined for them. They have play dates. Okay,
right.
I'm taking you over here to meet with this person because I approve of them. And my, you know, that kind of craziness. But all I tell children to do is to be honest with one another, to respect one another. And I try to model that behavior with those who I come in contact with. And I challenge people. I challenge people with new ideas. I challenge them with the way that I think that I want to go. And, you know, I ain't gonna say my phrase, but I think you have to either, you have to lead or follow or get out of the way, you know?
You know, you got me laughing.
You know what I'm saying. Right?
You know, you got me laughing over here.
Yeah.
But
I mean, that's
you know, not for the substance. Not for the substance, but you know the analogies that you use are you know the references that I'm familiar with that you use.
Right,
you know.
It's a little spicier than what I presented to you. You know, but let me share something. You know, and this probably talks about where TL is too.
Right.
I talked to one of the brothers on online. And he was describing his youth, okay?
Right.
There was tremendous conflict where he grew up in New York, and I thought this was very, very telling. There was a lot of conflict. You know, you couldn't go from one spot to another because there was this balkanization, this separate and distinct neighborhoods that people said they owned. And
right.
then what brought them all together was the culture. He said, and it was just one element of the culture.
Mm-hmm.
He said that element of the culture brought them together, and they started working through their problems through the process of this culture. In other words, he was saying to me that rather than utilize it in such a way, utilize conflict in ways that are alien to us,
right,
let's do it in the ways that are natural to us. And so hip-hop became a way of addressing conflict between groups that was within the culture.
Right.
And so you didn't have the problems then, because hip-hop solved it, because culture then shared something. You had something in common with one another. You had a common sense of identity and purpose and direction. And so what they essentially did was cleared out of space for themselves. They cleared social space.
Right.
So that they could begin to work with one another. They went back into their culture and used it as a resource to address the problems that they were dealing with.
Right.
So how did I deal with my children? I made sure that they know what came before them. You know, it wasn't spontaneously generated. Hip-hop didn't spontaneously generate.
Exactly.
Jazz didn't spontaneously generate.
Right.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
The dance did not spontaneously generate. It comes through a long series of traditions. And once a child understands that there is a history there, there's a tradition, there's a process.
To be proud of, yeah.
They then say, you know, I have value.
Mm-hmm.
I have to begin to move forward to maintain that.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, yeah.
You know, how do you treat people comes out of that unique way that we have of relating to one another, because we all have a common oppressor.
Right. You know,
and that common oppressor
was
doing what he's supposed to. And it's the same thing with what's happening with Obama now.
Right.
So many people are afraid to confront. Since 1968, 40 years or more, since that time, people have been afraid to confront.
Right.
They see the crazy stuff that's going on. They're just afraid to confront. You can avoid, deny, or shift the responsibility for every problem, but you ultimately have to confront.
Right.
And stand up to it.
Mm.
And that's where your humanity comes out. But unfortunately...
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, you know, I got a lot of little ideas about how that process happened and why it's continuing.
Yeah.
But I think that underneath it all, there was something in common that we shared.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I used to laugh at the people in that small Texas town by how they talk,
right?
You know, but they were like sisters and brothers with me, because we understood what we had to confront.
You know what, Brother Alon? Let me interrupt you just for a second here. And the reason that I want to interrupt you for a second, I want you to hold your thought, but, you know, because for us to describe to generally someone who's not from our culture, it's like telling a person, you know, I use this analogy, how sugar tastes. And unless you have a common experience, or unless you have a deep enough interest in not defending how we came to the conclusions and the positions and the perspectives that we've come to, if there is ever a person, and there are people that I know of Anglo descent who legitimately take me for who I am. They don't need me to be any particular way to make them feel comfortable. And those are the people that I'm most comfortable around. And then there are those people, like this one guy I was in a discussion with today in a room that will remain unnamed. And
the Voldemort room, huh? Yeah.
He tells me, he goes like this, he goes, well, you know, he was talking about something, he goes, and you know, Black Ice, here's the civil rights, some segment of the civil rights bill, number 3. And I'm sure you'll agree with it because it's about blacks. I was like, dude, what which one of your civil rights do you not want? What is the deal with you not understanding that it's a civil rights issue which is has to do with you? But it's that exclusionary initial reaction that people have, you know, I have, you know, and I can't explain it. It's inherent. It's like, you know, you have to get your civil rights, and you know, and like one person told me, Ola says, haven't you progressed? Can't you see that you progressed? I'm like, you know what my progression is? Where yours is? How far have you progressed? Don't look at me and say, well, haven't I progressed? Isn't it better? Don't ask me that stuff, because I don't have anything kind to say to you when you ask me something that's stupid. People want their civil rights, or they want their recognition or respect to be instantaneous, and they want ours to be incremental. And I'm like, oh no, it ain't happening that way. But hey, brother, I'm gonna tell you what. You go ahead you got open invitation. And as a matter of fact, you got encouragement. Anytime and every time, all the time. You know that, right? Same with T.L. Harris. And I've been watching the phone lines. I've invited some people to give a call in. And obviously, they don't feel comfortable. So, oh, wait, there's one. 323. Let me, they just hung up. 323, give me a call back. I'm sorry, I just missed you. You know, give me a call. Hey, Brother Ola, I got, there's some other people. And see, you got about, that's 11 from 30 is 19. Yeah, you got about 19 more minutes to go, 323, if you give us a call back. But, Brother Ola, I'll watch the switchboard. If you'll go ahead on, you and T.L. Harris, and share it however you choose.
I'm not saying another thing in the T.L.
Hey, man, you know I'm not going to let you out like that, brother. You know between you and me.
Come on, man.
You know between you and me, T.L. is quiet. You know, T.L. is reserved unless you get him in his element.
Don't you believe that, man.
Oh, you think not?
T.L. ain't quiet, man.
you out there?
Now, see, don't have me pull. You know, see, I'm going to pull the curtain off the wizard in a minute here.
Hey, man.
Ain't
don't
fool nobody, man. Come on, now.
Yeah, come on in here, brother. You know good and well you're welcome, man. Doggone it. Hey, hold on. I'm going to throw this phone number. The 323 was on there, and I didn't switch over quick enough. It's 347-945-7040. 323, give us a call back if you don't mind. And, Brother Ola, I'm turning it over to you and Brother T.L. Y'all do your thing, and I'll watch the chat room and the switchboard. And so I'll just be hanging around here.
Come on, T.L. he's sitting over there. You know, he's see, there's several kinds of people. You know, you got the sniper, right? You got the sleeper, right? You got the sidekick, and sometimes you have the snake. But you know, there's another one in there. You got the sampler too. See?
Oh, the sampler. But,
yeah, there's a sampler, and this is just some observations we made. But T.L. come in, and just when you think you got all your ducks in a row, he come in and pull out his old Red Ryder BB gun and shoot all your stuff down. See, so
I tell you what, I'm proud to know that, brother. I guarantee you, man. T.L., you hear me? He's gone.
Now, am I lying? If rescue me if I'm wrong now, T.L. Come on, tell me the truth, man.
Hey, Brother Ola, we got a 301 call in here. Let me put this 301 call in. Don't y'all go anywhere, okay?
All right.
All right, 301, here I'm putting you on. How you doing? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you just fine, black guys.
Turn it down. Turn that speaker down. Is this Sankofa?
No, this ain't Sankofa. This is Sapata from Paltor.
Sap, what's happening? How you doing? Welcome on in here. How you doing? Good to hear from you.
I'm chilling, bro. I'm just calling in to show you that you got some support out there in the real world.
Sorry, man. Thank you so much. Up there, that's 301's New York, right?
Nah, that's Maryland. right outside.
Oh, is that for real, man? Oh, man, thank you. Sorry about that.
Ain't no thing. I'm from New York.
See, that's that voice, man. You threw me off, man. With that. You don't sound like you're from no Maryland, bro.
Nah, I ain't. I'm from New York, man. I just live down here now.
All right. Hey, man, you know Brother Olai and you know Brother T.L., right, Sabatai?
Yeah, I know them, man. Tell Brother Olai.
They can hear you. You go right ahead. Y'all go ahead, man. We got 16 more minutes. 15 now. Go ahead and do y'all's thing. I'm listening.
Yeah, Olai, you know I'm broadcasting this through my room, right? We wondering, why are you talking so slow, man? We hear you all the time, man. Why are you talking so slow, man?
I know, yeah. I know, it must be the heat, man.
Yo, man, I want to thank you for the kind words, though, man.
Hey, Sam, man.
Giving my father a shout-out, man. Thank you.
Don't you be no stranger, Sam, man. Hey, look, dude, we let me get with you, man. Add me when you get a chance, and I'll add you. What room, man? What's the room?
A step pyramid.
I'm looking for you, all right? And I'm going to pop and holler at you, man, and add you, because I want to hear what you got to say. And I'll back them on down, and I'll be listening. Brother Olai, man, you, TL, and Brother Sabatai, y'all do your thing.
Yeah, well, Olai, you and TL, y'all go ahead, because this is a long-distance call for me, man. Pal Talk's free. I'll
okay.
Listen to you brothers over the speaker.
We got to,
we gotta
be practical, you know? You got
hey,
to be practical, man.
Peace, blessings, and too much respect, Brother Sabatai. And I'll holler at you if you don't mind.
All right, thank y'all. Thank y'all.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate you, man.
Etep, peace.
Etep, peace and blessings, brother. Oh man, I tell you, you know, I'm hey Brother Olai, you know what I'm saying? I'm just glad to hear Brother Sabatai, but I could tell he had a New York thing on him, man.
Yeah, that's what I call my little brother, you know.
Right on.
And I'm and oddly enough, you know, it's an interesting thing how when you talk about the roads that you travel.
Right.
Today I had a reunion with, I guess it turned out to be about 15 people who at one point or another, in and out, had been a member of my band. And we all got together.
Right,
at
you played music. I forgot.
Yeah, well, okay. So we had this thing today, man. And we got to talking, man. And we got to talking about some of the music. Now, TL. You've heard of Sugar Pie DeSanto, right? Is he still there? TL?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know
TL.
About Sugar Pie. You know Sugar Pie DeSanto. You've heard of her, right?
Have I?
She was Sugar Pie DeSanto. She
TL
was.
Yeah, Harris, you there, man? He's still online. Did you hang up, TL?
Yeah, probably so. But Sugar Pie.
Okay.
Well, Sugar Pie was, and I remember her. Sugar Pie was a cougar, right?
Right.
With one of the guys.
I shouldn't talk
about the sister.
Watch it, Dad.
Because, I mean, I loved her more than food, money, wisdom, or drink, man. But she used to go out with one of the guys in my band, you know,
right.
A guy named George Patterson. Patterson later played, he was a musical director for a while with Wilson Pickett, but Patterson, we call him Paco, you know, and
right.
Paco was just one of those really, really good brothers. We just spent a lot of time talking about it. Now, and Patterson played nothing but jazz, man.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing but jazz. And in fact, one of the guys in the original group that led to Earth, Wind and Fire was a guy named George Patterson, Thomas Washington, Tom-Tom, and the Tom-Tom 84, that's what he called himself.
Oh, heck, okay.
And another guy who was on drums, this group was called the Jazz Merchants, right?
Oh, okay.
And that guy on drums later led the group to become Earth, Wind, and Fire, and that was Maurice White.
Get out of
okay.
here.
So the point of all of this is that what when we got to talking about it today, and I got an old album, I promised the guys I was going to, you know, go down and pull out this old album. It's an old album called The Jazz Interpreters. It was so jive for the time, right? But what he said was he wanted to get some of those tunes because, you know, harmonics, chromatics, and all that kind of stuff. He wanted to kind of, you know, refresh himself with it. But what I realized is that the connection between one form of our music and the next form, that is, from jazz to R&B and to whatever we got right now, you know,
right,
exclusive of other people being in control of it, was still reflective of those things that we need to sustain ourselves. And I know, you know, I'm one of those, you know, I'll tell, and especially younger brothers like Sa and some of the other ones, you know, who go
right.
up and talk about hip hop as though it's, you know, the best thing since Munster cheese, right? But I mean, that's my age and ego talking, but. But the fact of the matter is that I recognize that structurally that music extends itself all the way back to Africa.
Right, exactly.
Rhythmically, I mean, and we create images out of that music.
Right.
And that music has, and in fact, every single instrument on the planet is simply trying to replicate the human voice.
Right, exactly.
And we were talking about some of the more salacious things that we did, you know, during that time. But and a few appropriate lies. But I didn't tell none. I just want y'all to know that I didn't tell.
Part of the truth, right?
I didn't tell no, man. But what's going to ultimately save us
right.
from all of this craziness, this political craziness that is being heightened, is how we have defined ourselves culturally. Music
right.
is simply one example. We've got to move, you know, one of the things that's maintained our sense of ourselves has
mm-hmm.
has been our writers, our poets.
Right.
You know. They have helped define character and tone of our relationships with one another.
Right, right.
And so, whether Barack goes down in a blaze of metaphorical
right.
bullets or not,
mm-hmm.
we have to maintain ourselves. And he's
exactly.
given, if we really realize the critical importance of his election, that
right.
is, it gives us an opportunity to come together again, then we can begin to move forward in ways that will transcend any kind of teabagger. And I refuse to call them tea party because, you know, then any kind of teabagger out there.
Right.
And I mean that in the original name that they called themselves as
right.
a quote, political movement
right.
and its salacious meaning. But that's what's going to ultimately save us. It has
yeah.
always been the music that saved us. It's always been the writing and the artists who have saved us because they've shaped character, tone, color, shape, they created the harmony. They created the communication between us.
Right, exactly.
Our problem is that we aren't really listening to ourselves anymore.
You know what, brother? Let me interrupt you. Don't lose that thought. You know, there was a friend of mine. And I admire this person. She's a very nice person, and she lives up in an area that you wouldn't think that that she's an Anglo individual, person of European
mm-hmm.
descent, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And she's a good friend. We've had some deep discussions about different things. I
right.
mean, you know, a good friend that I met online and whatnot. But you know, one day, you know, I'd invited her into one of the rooms where we played music and so forth. You know.
Sure.
And she commented on the text. She says, "Did you hear that song?" Or something like that. Yeah. And you know what, Brother Eli? It dawned on me at that point in time, I really don't hear music in a way. I feel it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's some kind of thing,
yeah.
Internal resonance. And,
yeah.
and you know what I'm saying? And it's like when I come in your room and sometimes you playing those African tunes.
Yeah.
And stuff. Man, you know, I don't hear it. I feel it.
Yeah.
And because I feel, you know, you say, it's, you know, people are imitating the voice or whatever.
Yeah.
I feel the emotion. I
yeah,
feel
the spirit of it, ain't it?
The dynamic.
Yeah.
You know?
I hate to say this, man.
let me tell you something, because I'm going to tell a story on myself, man. People do not understand. My daughter came in and looked at me, and she did one of those coyote jaw drops. You remember Wile E. Coyote? And she said, "What are you playing?" And what I was playing was, and I hate to say this, Lil Jon and the East Side Boys. But what was gassing me about it was that rhythmically, and I wasn't listening to the words, lyrics, you know, half of them don't have good diction anyways. So I wasn't listening to that. But it was just something in the way that they were singing that tune that just kind of got to me. Looking
right.
At me like, you listening to Lil Jon and the East Side Boys? And I said, yeah. And they just backed up off of me, you know. I saw a couple of for a knife. You know? but it's the music that binds us.
Exactly.
You know? It's the music that binds us.
There's, you know, TL, let me tell you what, we got about four more minutes here. Don't give up, don't quit. But I just want to say, let me do my little commercial thing here. I want to welcome everybody, and Beneath the Crust just came in the room, and I wanted y'all to meet Beneath the Crust. It's too late now, the number is, you know, we're going to, let's do it again. Brother Eli, TL, will y'all come back?
Yeah, I'm gonna do this, man. I'll do it.
All right, now I'm you know I'm gonna hold you to it, brother. Y'all know that.
Yeah.
I mean, y'all know if you don't know me by now, Brother Eli, you know that I'm gonna come back and back and back. But Sister Beneath the Crust, let me tell you, www.beneaththecrust.com. She's a writer and she's published and
That's encouraging.
You know, and let me welcome my guest, 4558. You know, and I had invited some other sisters in the room, and because, you know, but I want you guys to come back for real. And we, you know, whoever we get, you know, to call through, that's going to be great. And TL, I got 3 minutes, and I want to thank everybody for joining us on the next phase with Black Ice and Friends, my two very good friends. I mean, I love these brothers really deeper than they can imagine. Because they stand-up brothers, and that's Brother T.L. Harris and my brother, Elder Olazami. And let me let you have a mic, T.L. Harris. You and Ola, y'all close it out. And we'll meet up here next Thursday, 7:00 to 8:30 p.m., if you don't mind. So y'all do your thing. I'm done. I'm quiet.
Well, first of all, I just want to say I've enjoyed listening to Olazami, and I don't think I had a big enough notebook. but what I will say... what I heard about, you know, the music, I definitely think that, you know, it's important and definitely a legacy that we have to preserve. And as far as you were talking about the African rhythms and what have you, of what are considered, the only two quote unquote American forms of music, both are stemmed out of African rhythms. Gospel.
Yeah.
And that's blues.
That's right.
These are
the only
two forms of music that is considered all across the world as pure American
authentic.
Made, and they belong to us. Authentic.
Yeah.
And that is a legacy that we have to keep. That is a legacy that we have to maintain. And we have to do everything in our power to make sure that we can keep this going. And I have my own personal views about that, but I'll be back next week, so I'll talk about that some more.
Thank you. Hey, thank you. Brother Lai, we're gonna shut it down. We got like probably 15, 20 seconds to go. You got a closing comment, brother?
Yeah. The real purpose of life is to matter, to count, to stand for something, to have it made some difference that you've lived it all. That's
Amen.
Essentially it.
Thank you, brother. And I'm telling you, I'm looking forward to you guys. I got 10 seconds. I want to say peace, respect, high regard. Thank you so much for tuning in. Sapata, thank you, my brother. Peace and respect, and I'm going to invite you on. Thank you for joining us on the next phase of Black Ice and Friends. Brother Olai, Brother T.L. Harris, peace, respect, high regard to you. And I'm off this mic, and I'm hanging this phone up, and I'll catch y'all in the chat room.
Okay, bro.
Take care.
Take care.